The movie Come Sunday, based on This American Life, Ira Glass and Marcus Hinchey. And they then did a story of your life on that program. So then the movie comes along.
Well, This American Life was just Ira Glass. And Marcus was the writer. He came in later. And Josh, those guys were with Endgame. Came in through Endgame.
Okay. And those who played, I can't pronounce his name, who played you.
Chiwetel Ejiofor.
I'm going to have to say that. And so Chiwetel
Ejiofor.
Ejiofor played you.
Condola Rashid.
Condola Rashid played your wife. Mm-hmm. Jason Segel played?
A combination of primarily Jeff Volth, Brent Sharp, and a little bit of Gary McIntosh.
Martin Sheen plays Oral.
Yeah.
Were you okay with that?
He mastered it.
Yeah.
Man. And then he doesn't even like Oral, but he nailed that role.
Yeah. And Lakeith Stanfield and Danny Glover. Uh-huh. Round out the cast.
Yes.
Were you pleased with all of that?
Every one of them.
Were you pleased with the film when it finished? Were you there in as a consultant?
I was. Not the whole time. They left out some things that I think would have been more important. And the budget was tight until Netflix got in, because then they were the big guys. And they pretty much let them do what they want to do. But they missed. We left some real juicy, more confrontive things out. That because they didn't want to offend anybody. They wanted to soft shoe that part of it. But I think it would have been a lot more gutsy if because the writer, Marcus Hinchey, he's an atheist. He was born Catholic in Italy, raised in London, and now he calls himself an agnostic because he's been to all these services with me. He sits in church and cries and all that stuff. And we're really close friends. And for 10 years, we worked together all hours of the night. He would call and... when I would get emotional about something, he'd wait till I finished talking about it, and then he would probe that. So he has what he's written is very gutsy, and it's everything. And that would have, if we had have included more of that, couldn't have included all of it, but more of it, I think it would have been a lot more gutsy in that sense. I'm pleased with it, but not thrilled the way, because I know my story. And I know that the part that was more... confrontive. I didn't want to be combative, but confrontive and made people think a little bit more deeply was not included.
I think you've shared things here today more so than were ever seen in that film.
Right. Right.
Variety magazine. For those who choose to sample Come Sunday, they'll be rewarded not only by the compelling story of a devout Christian wrestling with his faith, but also by one of the great screen performances of recent years. As 12 Years a Slave, star
Chiwetel Ejiofor
captures both the charismatic passion and softer voice, introspective side of Bishop Carleton Pearson. That's pretty good.
I said to him, play me, but do you, because his career was just really beginning to be really big. He couldn't do my little nuances, the little humorous things that made the director uncomfortable. But we thought he was going to get nominated. He got a little bit unhappy towards the end with something that happened when I wasn't there. So he wouldn't come on and do, you know, the TV shows and push the movie like he could. We wanted them to air it in September, and they released it in September. They released it like in March. Well, September's closer to voting and thinking and, you know, the Tonys and all that stuff. It would have been more fresh in people's minds. But it came in as number 5 of the 10 top of the 80 movies that Netflix did.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it's because, obviously, we know why. Here's a man who came from what you've talked about in San Diego and your faith. And if it was somebody else who didn't have any kind of faith, we'd say, okay, you're an atheist or whatever. We wouldn't have believed it. But it's because of your background that made that happen for
you.
Yes,
sir.
Absolutely. You preached at All Souls on the third Sunday of the month. Travel to Chicago to preach once a month in the New Dimensions, Chicago?
I used to. I don't do that anymore. I've dissolved
right.
That one.
Of the things that you went on to did. You were
yep.
to do. You were named the interim minister of the Christ Universal Temple, a large New Thought congregation in Chicago for 2 years. I think you referred to that.
Yes, sir.
Paid handsomely.
Mm-hmm.
And then you left that position.
Mm-hmm.
And you got tremendous coverage all across the country, all sorts of media. I have a long, long list here. And that was probably surprising to you too, that you got such media attention or not. Yes?
Yes. This American Life triggered it all. Lisa Bonet, of The Cosby Show, saw this American, heard This American Life, and took it to all the producers at HBO. They were going to do a made for TV. I just happened to be reading. I left Tulsa and went to, because we were getting like 1 to 3 emails a minute the night that the This American Life NPR show aired. I forgot I even gave the interview. It just came on. Mm. And so, but it came on the Friday after the Wednesday that I signed my ownership, involvement, connection with Hire D. The whole corporation walked out of my office. It was the saddest day of my life. 2 days later, and it's like I have no friend in the world except my immediate staff. The following Friday, this show airs, and we're getting 1, 2, 3 emails a minute from Muslims and Mormons and Jews and Chester Cadju, who lived across the street from me at the time, when the founder of Quick Trip, we'd never spoken, and when the Tulsa World aired put the front page article about Carlton Pearson becoming a Universalist, I don't remember exactly what it said. He called me. It was the first phone call, but I'd gone to church. When I got home, he said, "Carlton, this is Chester. My wife and I have long agreed to believe what you believe." I said, "Really? Write me a check and help me make it home to save my property." I didn't really know anything much about him. But I started getting friends like that who would never have approached me. But I took all those emails, as many as they'd let me take, come in and went to California, to Cardiff by the Sea, just north of San Diego, and went to a 3-day fast. And I took these emails and I sat in the tub, not with the water in it. I just sat in there because I had a better view of the ocean line. And I read through these emails. And I read one from Lisa Bonet. And it said Lisa Bonet of The Cosby Show. And she had her number on it. I called her from the Cardiff by the Sea. She later came and brought the producer of How Stella Got Her Groove Back and another lady. And they were she wanted to do the movie. She took it to all the people at HBO, and she sort of got the ball rolling. Jeremy Klein of Plan B, which is Brad Pitt's company, flew to meet me and said, "My boss wants this movie. You got it. Let us do it. Have you signed away the rights?" I didn't know whether I had or not. I was doing so many things without my secretaries and all that stuff. I had. But Brad wanted to do it because he's brought up in fundamentalism. Born in Oklahoma, raised in Kansas, all fundamentalism. This movie really touched where he was. Jeremy's name is on the crawl for something. I'm not sure why. But anyway, I would like to do a more thorough presentation of the story that goes all the way back to San Diego, because people are saying, "So what now? Where are you now?" I'm nowhere. And I'm now here. I spell it differently. I'm in Wakanda. Nowhere, if I move the W from now to where, to here would be now here. So I don't know yet. I want to do more.
So when Brad comes in,
That's before I did it with NPR and Endgame.
Oh, do you wish that Brad could have told the story?
I think they would have. It would have been a little juicier, yeah.
Because they've done some great things.
Well, the first director was Mark Forster, and he loved it. His wife at the time. We met him in Santa Barbara Santa Monica to talk about it. Then we had Jonathan Demme. Jonathan gave Denzel his first big break. I mean, and Jonathan actually sent it to Beyonce to play my wife. He wanted to make. He said, "I think she should get a Academy, and I can do it." Condola just nailed it. She played the role of Gina so perfectly. I mean, I was in tears. She came in and spent 3 days with us here on her own dollar just to get to know my wife. So, and our setting and all that kind of thing. I explained that the marriage was strained at that time. I mean, I spent 2.5 hours with her, you know, in Atlanta when we first started shooting, before we started shooting. And so she wanted to come in and spend time and feel my wife out and fill us out and all that. She did a great job doing that. Felicia Rashad is her mother, and Amal's her dad. So going through all those personalities and walking through all that and learning that whole world is amazing.
Mm-hmm. You know, we could point out here that we've talked about you being a gospel vocalist, but you've won 2 Stellar Awards, and you were nominated for a Dove Award. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you were just a singer, you might have done a nice career there, or just a preacher. But you hear you have both gifts. Not many people have both at that level.
Well, it's not my singing or my preaching. It's the atmosphere and experience that I presented. I don't know that they liked my singing. They liked the whole ambiance of what I did in those tapes, because I have a lot of my old classic songs and I didn't do rehearsals. I refused to rehearse. I said, listen, just follow me, do what I do. Okay, because I'm not trying to be a singing star. In fact, they made me put my name on the contract. I wanted to put Higher Dimensions. They don't sign. And I'm glad I did now, because now I get an after check after turning 65. I didn't even remember any of that. I never thought I'd be penniless or without a decent income. It just never, not after I started, just never crossed my mind. I've never been penniless, but I knew that I'd be set for life, and that my parents lost their house because they were on my retirement. They worked for me for 20 years. I was giving them just a couple of $1,000 a month, but that stopped. I did it out of my pocket as long as I could, and my mom lives with me. Now my dad's gone, and their house went into foreclosure. Those are things the public doesn't know. But my parents were aging and retired, and daddy died of cancer, and mother had a heart attack. We were down at the Episcopal Church then. She just had a heart attack the only Sunday my dad decided to stay home, because they always came to church. He just happened to stay home that day, or my mom would have been dead when we got home, because my mother won't take an aspirin. She doesn't believe in medicine and all that stuff. So, but anyway, she's 89 and living with me.
I didn't ask. What is your mother saying about the gospel of inclusion?
She, as she gets older, she forgets what it even means, and she goes back to the old way. She keeps turning all the televisions in my house onto Christian television, she wants to keep me safe. But she understood it, because my mother's parents were really hard on her. She's an only child. Even my grandfather, who wasn't a holiness guy, didn't want her to go to parties. She couldn't do anything. She gave up a lot. So she understood it not as well as my dad did, because my dad's parents were in hell as far as he knew.
So to this day, does she worry about your faith?
Not as much as she does the whole family. She wants, but she misses, her whole identity was in ministry. And when I lost the ministry and the crowds and the choir and what she called the anointing and the Holy Ghost, she can't in her mind at 89 years old put anything else other than that as being legitimate.
How about all these great gospel songs that you sang and recorded? And you must have royalties coming in from records that you did. Isn't that true?
Yeah,
I
do.
The presence of the Lord is in this place, and living, he loved me, and send it on down, and all that.
Well, I didn't write those, but I
No, but I'm just saying, those songs, do you sing them now?
Oh.
And they still have great meaning to you. And those songs still make sense, don't they?
Yes.
In this inclusion.
Yes.
Even the old Rugged Cross.
Oh, yeah. Blood songs at Andre Crouch's funeral, when they sing The Blood Shall Never Lose Its Power. I was there. I didn't realize they had cameras on me, but it was live. People were singing, whereas I was singing the blood songs. Well, I don't even believe it's a lot of the theology, but I remember the experience. I'm crying. I'm raising my hands. I still speak in tongues. I sometimes sit up till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning listening to old Azusuk music. It just refreshes my soul like nothing else does, because that's the way I've lived. That's been my source for inspiration and encouragement, and it still is.
Yeah.
I'm going to the Stellar Awards next month as a guest of some people. And they have a private booth for me, so I don't have to mix among the people much. But they love me when I go. All the singers and gospel singers, I still hear from them. Usually when they get in trouble, I hear from them.